sit down, I'll listen, wait. Relax, my dudes, it's not too late to join in with these awesome fans and marvel out there.
Arts and chips and OC fix and memes and memes and best girl queens.
A hype train squad that just won't wait to know all of the times and shit.
It's a podcast. It's also a gun.
One thing I really would love to know is how did Dark Dice actually get started?
Dark Dice was started as a icebreaker. We have so my wife and I are now full-time podcasters. We were hobbyists. We still are hobbyists, though we now make a career out of it.
It's amazing.
And we have these audio fiction shows. One's called The White Vault. It's the most popular one we make. It's a horror podcast set in the Arctic. And the cast of the show was invited and us to do a live show in New York City by the No Sleep podcast. And we're like, oh yeah, we'll do that. That sounds amazing. Like you said, yeah. And we never met these people because we record everyone remote. They just record on their own with a script by themselves and no one had met. So I was like, ah, you know, before we all share an Airbnb for a few days, we should probably meet first.
Have
so
a rendezvous, right?
An icebreaker.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we did a digital rendezvous beforehand, playing D&D for 6 hours. I said like maybe the weekend, like 2 6-hour sessions, and it wound up being like 2 weekends of 6 hour sessions, and we knocked through it and we had a lot of fun, and some real friendships were made out of that weekend. And
D&D kind of just D&D
1 hour.
Yeah,
it really brought us together. So that's how the show sort of came about. The player characters didn't die as quickly as I wanted, and the show wound up being a lot more fun. And the timing for me personally was also really good to work on it.
Yeah. And that's kind of crazy about D&D, you know? It's D&D, whether you're aware of it or not, whether you know what it's like, every single time, D&D is just one of those things where you always go out looking for copper, but you always end up finding gold. You know, that's just the magic of D&D.
It's very it, yeah.
Yeah, you know?
It's pretty special like that. You can make, it's an easy way to make great friendships.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be. Or an easy way to figure out that you shouldn't be friends with someone.
Yeah, you can really get to know people by how they interact, and because it almost throws them into these situations, because people really envelop themselves in it. They immerse, there you go, that's the word, immerse themselves into it. And, you know, you kind of get a good gist of how people would react just depending on what type of character traits they put on themselves. You know what I mean? And there's always, you learn Absolutely. Which ones are that, like D&D player. And I'm still kind of fresh, you know? And I'm one of those where, hey, can I do this? Is it possible? Like, you know, can I like.
It's possible. You just gotta
yeah.
be creative.
One of the first questions I asked.
That's the beauty of D&D.
Yeah, because I was playing as one of those big guys, but it was a berserker one. I can't remember. One of the big guys from the
barbarian
ice.
Barbarian orc or something. Or like
barbarian.
Oh, Goliaths. Yeah.
Goliath. Boom. Done. Yes, I was a barbarian Goliath. And one of the first questions I asked, we were fighting gnolls. I go, hey, there's a gnoll with a bow over there shooting at us. Can I like grab the closest gnoll with me and throw it at that gnoll so I could just take out his range? And he goes, yeah, if you can pull off the roll. And I was like, bet, let's go. And I pulled off the roll and I'm like, oh my God. Because I was able to really play that, because I like martial arts, I like combat, I like the action, you know, big fan of like the God
I
of
see
War
all the
series.
Orcs. Yeah.
Yep. Yep, I'm an orc. I like
and the necklace and the shirt, you're
mm-hmm. I like to fight and get crump. So yeah, as you can tell, you can easily see where that came from, right? And I'm like, yeah. One of the first things I asked, and it was so beautiful to pull it off. And And I was able to like and snarl and act like this big and bad tough dude. And it was so beyond what I expected, even though I was fully aware of what it was and what it does. It's just, it's another thing to really do it. And I know my brother is into Critical Role and he wants to play D&D so bad. And I'm like, dude, like, it's not as hard as people think to find a D&D campaign, you know, because there are people who really want to try this and really want to play this. And if you really want to do a D&D campaign, you can find it. You can find it, especially if you look, for sure.
They got online groups too. They're regularly looking for people to join.
So where did you guys get the idea to implement horror into D&D? Or is that like, you guys are always doing horror, so let's just bring D&D with that?
Yeah, kind of. So we're a horror podcast, like I mentioned before. We make a bunch of horror podcasts. So I thought I'd like to scare my cast. So I went to really far extremes in trying to figure out like, okay, what would they be okay with? And kind of like the haunted house experience, you know, we all are okay with what we're going into, with the expectation that we're going to be a little bit scared and it's going to be kind of fun. And that horror has been a genre that I've delved into for forever as just a part of who I am and my wife, and it's part of our relationship. Mm-hmm. And my business partner. It's what we kind of, it makes up a core of a part of what we are in many ways. Even mm-hmm. if we're doing like something silly, there's usually an element of like faux horror or, you know, tropes of horror or something.
Yeah.
In a somewhat respectful way that we just love it.
Yeah. You know, it's like people go to the people. There's a reason why horror movies are their own genre. There's a reason why people like to go to haunted houses. There's just something in the human psyche that just likes to have the shit scared out of them. You know, and that's why people love horror movies. And I think what's brilliant with Dark Dice is that you guys take it another step further. And now you play this immersive game, but now it's a horror experience, you know? And there's
so many different ways you can experience horror too.
Yeah. And what's funny is now all those people who are like, oh no, you're good. I need to, what's great about that is that now all those people who are like, that doesn't make sense in a horror movie, here's what I do. And now that's in D&D and with a horror aspect, and I'm guessing that's kind of a challenge in itself to try and maintain that horror with, you know, people who are playing a game that causes you to critically think about what to do and what next steps to take.
Well, you know, it's a lot about descriptions and setup and trying to I don't want to say railroad, but like in a video game, there are guidelines and these railroads that keep us on track and interested. They make a villain really hateable. You want to go after him or her or them. Mm-hmm. And in that sort of way, you can, I don't want to say intentionally manipulate people into doing certain things. You're like, oh, this seems like a good idea. This seems like the best option for you right now. So in a lot of ways, I'm kind of a railroady DM. Mm-hmm. Also, it helps when your players are interested and invested in also experiencing kind of, you know, embracing the flaws of their character. So you can say like, okay, you love this thing, you see this thing, and like, oh, it's a bad time for me to go shopping, but there's a mall right there.
Yep.
Stuff like that.
I think that's so brilliant though. I think when it comes to horror, I think you definitely have to have that manipulation there. Cause it's a thing in horror. It's like, oh, we're gonna be safe here, but it's just another bit of manipulation. And even baddies in horror movies, they manipulate their victims in horror movies. It's like, you know, they pretend to not be there, they pretend to be dead or whatever. I think, yeah, really trying to make the players in kind of a cat and mouse area really adds to it. I think even though the word manipulation is mainly associated with that type of negativity, I think in this case, it definitely is a favorite thing. Kind of like, you know, that popular game Among Us, you know, where
it's very Among Us.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, it's one of those areas where, you know, manipulation is the name of the game and it really creates that fun. And, you know, it trains, I think their experiences like that are healthy, honestly, as crazy that sounds, because in Among Us, you learn how, you subconsciously learn how to pick out what deceit looks like, what manipulation looks like, what how to detect being gaslit and how to defend yourself from these. It subconsciously teaches you these skills that you will need in a very real world that will very much try and do this. So I think in D&D, when you kind of go at it like that, it teaches these players and these viewers, you know, that you can't always trust what your eyes see. There's always something beyond the corner. And I think in the right places and in the right areas, especially in a fun environment like that, you know, trying to manipulate your players will benefit them in more ways than just a fun experience. You know, I think there's a place for it. It's like when you spar.
Yeah, I'd have to add that there's also a some of my favorite moments in the show are when we're actually not having anything horrible happen. The characters are just like recovering and sort of being themselves around a campfire. Mm-hmm. I think that there's something very powerful about existing in a space within horror. Like those moments between the horror are really what I love probably the most, even more than the horrible stuff sometimes. Just that space of existence and those really long kind of Breaking Bad scenes.
Yeah, because they squirm when there's nothing there, right? That must be funny when
not necessarily that, but the just honestly when you really care about someone, like there's a really great moment in Game of Thrones where you realize you love Jon Snow, like as mm-hmm. a character, like, and then you're like, Jon Snow is in a bad place. I don't think he's gonna make it out of this one. And it's like really gut-wrenching for you because you really care about Jon Snow. And it's not because he's a warrior, he's been through these tough things. You care about him because he's got a family and he's trying to do the right thing. He's talking to people. And in the same way, Dark Dice for me is, it's about, you care about Rowena and you care about Father Westpike when they're just sort of chatting around a campfire, BSing and just being themselves and talking about what they're gonna do when they get back home. Like that's, to me, that's the really interesting stuff. And that really sparked us having a second season because originally, like I said, it was just a one and done sort of thing. And we kept going because there was unfinished business that I really wanted to explore and the players wanted to explore. So that's kind of where we continue with the show.
That's awesome. And, you know, that once again adds another layer to storytelling. Because it's one thing to, some people just want to make a horror movie with people with no names just so they can, bah, you know, but it kind of makes the separation between real horror and kind of like a slasher flick, you know, because real horror, I think, is most effective when you genuinely don't want to see these people, you know, get the axe. I think it's that kind of endearment because, again, it's not even, it's real people role-playing in these roles and it kind of adds that realism and that immersion. And when you add that character development in that, it really kind of starts to stack on each other, you know, and you see the potential of something like Dark Dice. Absolutely.
I was so upset at our first player death. I just have to say that. Like I was very upset because I wasn't even planning it to work that well. It just... The dice do what they do and suddenly we were down a player and I was like, oh, this is too early.
And that's totally another part of it is the randomness and the chaoticness of the dice, you know, and that really adds because it's not only something you have to adjust to, it's something that the players have to adjust to. And again, separating from an actual horror movie, even though a horror movie, every single plot point is scripted out, you never know what's going to happen. You never really know when, you never genuinely really know when someone is going to mess up and die, which really adds to it. Because why was Game of Thrones so great? Because we had no idea when they were going to kill off a character. But now with Dark Dice, it's a genuine thing because we genuinely don't know, not even the DM, not even you guys who are producing the show. No one knows what is going to happen. It's all about the dice gods and whether or not they choose to spare you or they choose to sacrifice you, you know? And I think it's pretty, pretty amazing, you know? So why D&D in the first place?
As a mechanic or as a storytelling part of the podcast, in what context?
Both, as a game? I think, because that was a good point, yeah.
I love storytelling, and I think collaborative storytelling is probably one of the most fun types when, again, no one knows the outcome. We're not really sure what's going to happen with it, and that is a great appeal to me. I think it's very powerful for pretty much everyone around a table if it's a good group, and you can really craft something very special that's greater than any one of you individually would be, or individually combined, even mm-hmm. if you're all in the same room creating a story together. And I mean, digital room for us, because we're all virtual, but recording over Zoom and such from continents away. But I think it's a very powerful way to bring a group of people together very quickly, especially in horror, because you have to survive. But aside from that, it's just the collaborative storytelling is just something I love and I've been fascinated with and obsessed with since I was about 6 or 8 years old, playing D&D on a school bus on my 45-minute commute to and from school.
Oh, man. 45-minute school bus ride? Man.
Oh, yeah.
I feel bad for kiddos who have to deal with someone punking them for 45 minutes. If there's like that one person on the school bus, you know, that's something. But you know what? That's long enough to get some time in with D&D for sure.
Absolutely. That was what we did basically for once I met my friend, Julian. We were just doing that every time. And then suddenly the rides were fun. They were like the best part of the day. And it was like, went from.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Well, bus rides for me were kind of where I can let kind of my brain just let it go and just let it just throw out everything. And before you know it, bam, sometimes I'd even miss my stop. I'm just so lost in my own thoughts, but not in a bad way, kind of in like a alleviating way. Was there any moment in Dark Dice that really was your favorite specific moment that's happened on the show so far?
You know, it's weird. You have to break it down into two different contexts. One is playing it, and then one is like when it's fully produced and done. And there are differences to those. Because like playing it, there was a really funny moment where they saw a bunny rabbit like briefly, and there was just visual comedy that doesn't translate to podcasts, so it's completely cut, where like and the rabbit looks at you and like whittles its nose, and I was somehow able in that moment to like wiggle my nose at that exact, and I don't know, but it was ridiculous, and it was we all just sort of died because we've been really scared. And there's also some really great reveals of the Silent One doing horrible things to the players, which is those are always particularly fun to play. And then, you know, one of the players is the Silent One, and I'm messaging them like, oh, you should do this. And like, oh, what if I did this? I'm like, that's even better. Do that.
Oh, man. That's.
But as far as the ones that are edited and done, the funeral was the first funeral was probably one of my favorite moments. And also there was also a really great moment later where they encounter these creatures called the Silent Faithful. And it's just this disgustingly horrible battle scene that takes place. And that was a really fun one to experience, because if they touch you, if they cut you, if their blood gets into your cut, which is basically every attack they make, because they're these creatures are ashen gray skin, and they have bone and steel and wood woven into their bodies, so they're constantly bleeding, and they want to share their blood with you. And you get a little bit in you, and they're trying to stab you, so it's pretty easy to do that. You fail a constitution saving throw, and that's pretty easy to do when you become one of them within a very quick period of time. So it's a bit like zombies for D&D. So it's like very high tolerant probability of player death happening here. None of them turned, and I was so peeved. But it was like super high tension, and there's a drowning rule taking place because they're unable to breathe, and they're just really fun descriptions that I got to bring to life. And the sound effects were particularly fun, with some screams that I got from Kessie, who helped me do some of the monster sounds.
That's amazing, man. I'm like, shit, what would I do? I'm like, okay. I know if I was in that situation, I'm like, I don't know how many of y'all got a shield, but let's put up a wall. If anyone has ranged attacks, you're in the back. Let's just slowly back away, you know, shoot a fireball across their head. See how many we got. Do one of those sight rolls. I'm such a D&D noob. Perception
roll. Line of sight.
Boom. Yeah. Shoot a fireball or light up an arrow and shoot it and see how many of these things we have to get through. You know, what can we do that? I know that I just... That's what's so interesting, because some people be like, no, let's run away. Oh my God. I think it's just so brilliant.
That'd be my response in real life.
You know, definitely a question that needs to be asked is, how did you guys manage to get Jeff onto the podcast?
The dice find a way, but
I was waiting for it. I was waiting for that.
We really don't know. We tried. We've tried multiple times figuring out how this worked out, and we still don't have a real clear answer. except to say that I've looked at interviews and when I've spoken with him, Jeff is a very friendly, genuine person, and his he seems to like to work with people that he admires in some capacity. And I think that was maybe what did it. We've been working in the indie podcast space for about 6 years. We've got a really good reputation in the audio drama community, in the audio fiction community, in the podcasting community, three separate communities. We've got a really good work ethic. We've released a new 30-minute episode every 2 weeks in that time, basically. And have been doing so as a two-person core team of writer, producer, editor, sound designer, all in the two of us. So I think maybe that's what got him interested. I'm still not sure. And I haven't outright asked because I'm just so happy to be in the room.
Why are you taking our calls, Jeff?
Anything else? Yeah, exactly. But we wind up usually talking about like other things. Like we sort of went on a Fiddler on the Roof tangent for a while there.
Yeah. I think that's incredible. It really is. So definitely, which makes a perfect segue to what is it like playing D&D with Jeff?
Jeff is a very cool person. I don't want to say this in any kind of a negative way. It's a very positive thing. When you see him on film, like that's him. He acts, he's a very good actor, but he's also very, there's a lot of himself in the way that he acts. And I guess that's probably the easiest way to describe it is imagine you're playing D&D with someone who's very high energy, very fun, very creative. Jeff's a very creative guy. He's very musical and he's very knowledgeable on a lot of weird sub niche topics that just sort of pop into the discussion. And he's very, he is such a unique individual and it's just a lot of fun. It's hard to describe it as anything otherwise. Yeah.
You know, despite the fact that I don't know Jeff as well as you do or anyone close to him, I know that at least from what I gathered, there's a genuine positive eccentricness to him. You know, it's very, I'm trying to come up with the word for it. It's what's it called when it's a very
quirky.
Nice moment.
Delightfully quirky.
Yeah. Yeah. The word, cause the word humble keeps popping up, but it's not the word humble. It's whenever wholesome, boom, there we go. There's a wholesome, genuine eccentricness to Jeff that I pick up, you know? And I think that's why he's so endearing to so many people is that people see him and they're like, what we see is what we get, you know? And that's what people like. And it's because of his eccentricness and how unique he is as a genuine, as an individual that people like about him. And it really goes to show that we do live in a world where, you know, why try and fit in when you were made to stand out? And whenever you're someone who is just unapologetically you, people are drawn to that, you know, and that's one thing I love about Jeff Goldblum.
I agree with that.
So what I want to know is, because I was checking out y'all's pages, what is Fool and Scholars production and what other stuff do you guys work on?
So Fool and Scholar Productions is Caitlin Statz, my partner and co-creator and wife, and she's the writer and producer, or she's the writer and all the PR and visual stuff. I handle, I'm Travis, then
Brian. Hi, Travis.
I do the sound design, editing, music production, and like basically that's Fool and Scholar Productions. And we have a dog, he's the ampersand. His name's Izo, and he's the mascot and motivational support. We make audio fiction new stories every 2 weeks, usually 30 minutes in length. They are usually scripted, the exception being Dark Dice. They're a lot of fun. We go from horror to sci-fi. That's currently where we are right now. We've got our fantasy, Dark Dice. We make The White Vault, which is, again, the Arctic horror podcast, which is a bit like The Thing. People are going to Svalbard, Norway, a real place, to find the source of mysterious signal and discover they might not be alone. We have one called Vast Horizon, where a woman wakes up in a spaceship, supposed to have a population of 250,000, and she's the only one on there, and she's trying to figure out what's happening as the ship is falling apart around her, and she's been kind of left behind, or maybe she's the only one left. We don't really know. It's exciting. And then we have Liberty, which is a series of stories that all take place on a colony planet that's been isolated for a very long period of time. And it's kind of developed into a resource scarce, resource rich environment. It's quite unique. So we're trying to figure out all the different adventures. They all take place in the same colony. And that's just the Liberty podcast. And that one also has a D&D-ish podcast within it called Vigilance, where my voice is replaced by Wayne June and Ashley Birch, and is actually one of the people on the team. And got a couple other people like Space Ghost and Duke Nukem who voice characters throughout it.
That's really awesome. You know, I know Ology Geek, we have Dicesh, which is run by two gentlemen, two bright young gentlemen by the name of Lava and Felix. And Dicesh right now is they would give D&D advice to any newbies, and they would record their one shots. And it's a wonderful show, and I'm very proud of the work that they're doing, you know, and much like me, they're my cat just doesn't care. And
it's their nature.
It's their nature. It's like, sorry, Dad, I know you're kind of in the middle of a thing, but you know, like me, who's really branching out and dipping his feet into the water of so many different things, they're doing the same thing too. And they're really hitting the ground running. And, you know, that's something. And as time goes on, you know, they're learning on what they can do with this show. And I'm very proud of them and the work that they're putting into it. But yeah, it's a show that I look forward to seeing develop, which comes from All Ages of Geek, which again is known as Dicesh. But what I would ask definitely, because absolutely you, sir, would be my superior in so many different things. And there's so many things that I could learn and that any of us can learn, you know, with all of this. And you guys are professionally doing this work. You know, what advice would you give to people who are starting out and trying to make their own D&D show or podcast?
Honestly, the more you make, the better you'll do. I know that sounds silly, but the difference of me being where you are to me being here is just hours of practicing and doing the thing for many hours. But for as far as D&D podcast, specifically how to make a D&D podcast, first and foremost, I would recommend having an outline as the DM. I'm assuming the DM is probably the showrunner of what your plot's going to be, so it's not as aimless, unless that's kind of the gimmick. There are some really fun aimless D&D podcasts where it's like, oh, we're going to get drunk and go on adventures, and that's very fun and one-shotty sometimes, and that's easy to jump into. But the longer sort of stuff, if you have a general idea of what you want to do, or if you have a direction of kind of what you'd like to do, you can gently nudge your players in that direction, and it can make for very impactful storytelling. Communicating with your players ahead of time on stuff is also really helpful. So if you, some podcasts do a really great job of going ahead of time and saying, okay, here's kind of what we're going to do in this session, and we'd like to run this so it's going to be, we can edit it into bite-sized chunks. So if we have like, all right, a short combat, because people usually like to shorten combat by reducing hit points of enemies and making attacks more powerful in some ways, or just, again, everything has lower hit points. So if you're going to kill something, it's going to die, and you don't have to wait like 2 hours to hear if they killed the not very impressive monster, because D&D sometimes has high HP. So that can be helpful for shortening combat. But I got distracted. The big thing I would say is letting your players know kind of what you want to run through ahead of time before the session, and giving them like a couple of minutes to ruminate on it, and then running through it. We don't do that at all because I like to surprise them and terrify them in horrible ways, but it's something that many shows use successfully to keep people on task and on time if they have, a clear objective in mind. And if they don't, that's fine too. But prep work as the DM is really key, I would say, or being, I know it sounds like DM's job is to improvise, yes, but having a general idea of what you would like to do can be extremely helpful. Even if they go in the opposite direction, you have an idea of kind of what you intended, and you can steal elements from your original idea, or, you know, do something completely different. But the more you can prep, the better you can do. And if you do edit your show, which you probably should do, that's also very helpful, because there are these long pauses. People say our show is too polished, it sounds too good, and it doesn't really sound like D&D's. That's like the biggest critique we get. I'm like, oh, okay, that's not too bad. But there's also the opposite, which is just where you have 3 hours of people in a room. And while that can be fun, editing these long gaps of silence or rules clarifications can be really helpful toward speeding up the process, or like redundant information. I'm going to hit the thing. You're going to hit the thing. Yeah, I'm going to hit that thing. And then, okay, roll a d20. All right, rolled it. It's a 5. I'm going to do some math. Math ends up at 12. I hit. And all those things could be summed up and edited into, I'm going to hit the thing. 12. And suddenly you've saved 40 seconds of someone's life. Actually, if you do the math and you have like a lot of listeners, that's a lot more than just 40 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's the efficiency of time for a lot of people. And I'm not saying you don't have to go as crazy as us, but just little conveniences like that go a long way in finding and retaining listeners over the long course of what you're doing. And a little bit of editing goes a very long way in those sorts of small things. We're not saying edit out every ums are characteristic, especially for some characters, but redundant Jeff. Information or long silences or like stopping and looking at rules can be very helpful. Lastly, if you're all in the same room, giving everyone a microphone is a cool one. If you can do that, if you can afford that, if you can't, getting a microphone that is I think the phrase is I'm going to butcher this. I think it's a condenser microphone. It's the one that captures, there's two types of microphones. If you go to a store and you're looking up, I want to get a microphone for recording more than one person at a time. I want to be able to hear multiple people. You're not getting a Shure SM58 because a Shure SM58 is the other type of microphone, which only is like a small bubble. The bubble that it captures is really small, so you have to be right here to capture any noise. But if you're in a room with people, you want something like a Zoom, which is an H5N Zoom, which will capture the sounds of the entire room, and you can hear everyone talking instead of just one person's really close and the other player's over here really, really far away talking. So the microphones you get are very important, and audio quality is so very important because people will turn off a podcast so much faster than they'll turn off a television show, or they'll turn off a television show for bad audio much faster than for bad video. The video could be cutting out, but as long as they can hear what's happening, they'll stay engaged. And that's an actual scientific study that's taken place by greater minds than my own. So audio quality, if you can fiddle it, and prepping as the DM, having your players know what they're going to go through, ideally having their consent to do everything is even greater. You should definitely do that ahead of time, just so you don't, if you're in the horror genre that I delve into so frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that can help.
Very, very solid advice, you know, and that's, you know, I'm going to pass this off and I go, guys, check it out. Because I told them, I go, you know, this is a learning experience, you know, whenever it comes out, you guys should definitely take a look at it, you know, and it's, And I'm even going to be involved in some recordings myself, and I'm super excited. And, you know, it's
yeah.
And that's how growth kind of also goes when it comes to repetition, but also with mentors, also with people who have done it themselves, you know, and the more mentors you find, the faster you can cut that learning curve for yourself. And I think just having, because the mind is so much like a parachute, you know, you can't take the jump and expect it to work if it's closed. And this type of advice and this type of growth really helps push people forward and gives them a good idea of where to go and clears the fog and creates a general sense of direction that really helps to take your skills to the next level. You know, it's why people look stuff
up on
YouTube.
If I could add two more small things, there's a great community on Twitter and there's a great community on Facebook groups. It's separate from Facebook, you know, regular. You go to Facebook and you type in the group instead of, it's like you can actually see the posts.
Totally.
One called the Audio Drama Hub is really a great place. It's a community of people who record and do audio drama, of which actual plays are a piece of. They make up a small piece of the audio drama, actually a fairly large piece of the audio drama world. And that community, Audio Drama Hub, it's a Facebook group. It's very useful. They also have a podcast, the Audio Drama Hub podcast. And they talk about like how to set things up, how to get yourself a microphone for remote recording if you're all using Zoom or Roll20 to play D&D, how to get everything sounding decent. So it's very relevant, and it's a group of, I think, over 2,000 peers who are all doing this actively. So that's helpful. And if you don't want to do Facebook, Twitter has groups, and Reddit has an audio drama and also podcast subreddits. But Twitter is also incredibly a great place to ask for advice from other great creators.
That's amazing. Like, just, you know, giving a pool of knowledge to someone definitely is an amazing thing. So thank you for that. You know, I do believe that, you know, you feed a man once and you feed him, you catch a fish, you feed a man for a day, you teach a man a fish, you feed him for a lifetime. And I think, you know, saying, you know what, here's the sources I picked from, here's where you can find all that advice. It really is, and it shows, you know, what is the reaction? Because you can open the door for someone, but if they walk in, that's entirely up to them, you know. But I think that's something I'm definitely going to look into. I'm going to drop it in our laps, in their laps, and go, yo, I just got off with the Zoom call with Travis, And he's like, oh, you guys should check this out. And he's like, I'm gonna just drop it in their lap, you know? And one thing I am absolutely looking forward to is putting on the podcast and listening, because everyone hears that joke where, you know, I'm comfortable when I come home and I have a few drinks and I turn on the TV and it's like, this person murdered these people and blah, 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 horrific sign. And some people are just into that. Like, I know I've had a couple of friends in a couple of relationships where they're just so into those crime shows and all that. Yeah. Yeah. True crime and all that and horror movies. And, and you know what, just come home and pop in some Dark Dice and, you know, and enjoy the fun and enjoy the ride. I think that's really great. And when it comes to a ride like that, you know, what ride do you want to take your viewers on? You know, what do you want your audience to get out of Dark Dice podcast?
I'd like people to feel a little bit better about their own problems, because they're not quite as bad when you're not being stalked in the woods at night. They're certainly not as terrifying. But I think it's really an adventure, and it's a story of humanity and friendship. And I say humanity, but I don't mean humans. I mean that thing inside of us, compassion, that drives individuals together, whether or not they're human or some other species. But I think it really is fun for people to hear these very flawed heroes come together and have some very real, awkward, funny, terrifying moments, and have these shared experiences with them. Because again, I really love our cast. The new season, everyone knows Jeff, but Russ Moore is the Dungeons and Dragons podcast. He's a very good comedian, great voice actor. He's on the show and he's hilarious, but he's also playing this really grounded monk. So it's a dragonborn or scaleskin, as we call them, monk, who's just so different than who he is in real life. But he's a very nice character, and he goes very on tangents a lot. And then you have like Blom and Gail Vogelberg, who are these witch hunters, and they're Holly Billinghurst, who's basically a teacher. She's a full-time teacher, and she's also in the Lucky Die podcast. And then you have Glom is played by Sean Howard from not Dungeons, he's on there sometimes too. The End of Time and Other Bothers, which is this very loving, caring TTRPG or actual play podcast. And Sean is also very funny. He creates Alba Salix with his partner. And that's a ridiculously funny comedy podcast, among others, Civilized as well. And he's an improviser. So he's also like, he's trying not to be funny, but he is funny just naturally. And he's playing this very interesting witch hunter who I can't really say too much about till the episode comes out. But
totally.
Between those guys and then like Peter Lewis from the No Sleep podcast, who's Soren Arkwright, our kind of silent brooding protagonist, who actually is kind of funny. He leaves the Batman route like very quickly. You know, he's brooding and mysterious, and then you realize he's actually very funny. So he's got a very soft side to him.
You have that D&D player who's like, don't try and talk to me. I don't do friends. I'm dark and brooding. That edginess. And you know, I'm so attracted to.
And he goes for the hugs.
Yeah, and he goes for the hugs, you know. And one thing I love whenever you mention Sean is that I love improvised humor, man. I love it. I love doing improv, because I think whenever it just kind of comes at you, you reach kind of a point where you enter this zone where it just starts flowing out of you. And that's why it's kind of like, hey, follow my lead. And then shenanigans just happens after that. You know, I love improvised humor. I love it myself, very much so. It's so funny.
As the editor, it's my job to take anything they say and just say yes. And then we're like, oh, I'm going to juggle these knives. Suddenly, like, I'm going to be doing the sound design for them juggling knives for like an hour. I'm going to find some knives. I'm going to make some knife sounds of like, you know, being thrown, like the leather squeaking of their armor as they're moving. So it's very much my job to make their improvisations as real as it can be. We actually had a 2-hour speed dating episode where like that was my job. Like we had one character just go on speed dates, because that's kind of scary for some people. And that was a lot of fun.
That's so funny. I know if I was juggling knives, you'd be like, all right, check this out. I've been practicing for years until I went on a hiatus, but I still got it. It's like riding a bike. Start juggling and then you hear, ah, shit. And then you hear another tick. And it's like, you see, it wasn't that hard. And as I throw my hand up, you see like the knife embedded in like a piece of armor or something. It's like, yeah, you know, it's just part of it. It's like riding a bike, you know. and you create these little nuggets of situational humor, and it kind of just, it kind of snowballs on top of itself, you know? And it's kind of, when you start, it gets easy to keep going. It's like going down a hill. But that's one of the things I love about improvised humor. And one of the things that also works well to improvised humor is comedic timing as well. It's like, it's like when you mentioned those zombies, you know, and let's say the party kind of like makes that escape, and then everyone is kind of trying to process what the hell just happened. And one person is like, well, that sucked. Shit. And just breaks it. And it's really those moments or little sprinkles of magic, because it's improvised humor. I love it. I love improvised humor. I think it has the potential to be some of the best, you know, because sometimes, because the first idea that whenever anyone is planning anything, the first idea that pops into your head is often the most crazy, you know, because it's always like, here's the idea.
Okay. I gotta give some podcast recs to you. I got to give you some recommendations.
End
of Time and Other Bothers, because that's what he does. That's Sean's show, and it's very funny.
Okay.
But also League of Ultimate Questing. They're Portland-based, which we were out of Portland for the last 4 years. So we know a lot of Portland people. Dice Boys are also a really great Portland one. Those are my two favorite comedy ones. They're Portland-based, both of them, but they're somehow ridiculously funny. All this amazing talent in the small area, or surrounding area, I should say. But those are two of the funniest ones that have come across that are like really well done, that are not End of Time and Other Bothers.
It makes me so happy that I'm like, look, I get that we got to make content and record this, all right? But like, low key is for me, so I could check it out later. You know? And
absolutely.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, and one of my favorite podcasts, or rather, little role playing things on YouTube. There's by a gentleman by the name of Zorn the Bear. I had the name, man. I just can't come up with it. I need a drink of water. Warhams. There we go. And he had an episode that it was just all orcs. You know, and there's a bit where the ship is kind of going down. They're landing, but it's orcs. So there's not much of a difference between the ship crashing and the ship just going down. It's like, oh, I always got an idea how we can crump the humans all sneaky like. And one of the knobs, who's one of the big, big armored up orcs, as the ship is like turning and crashing, he's just lying there, kind of step going back and forth as the ship turns. He's kind of falling back and forth. And as he flies by, as he rolls, slides by one of the orcs, he goes, oi, and then he slides by again, you better do this or I'll crump you. And then he's just sliding. It's so hilarious. It's so funny because the things, first of all, orcs are just ridiculous in general. They're so funny, especially with 40K. And, you know, and even 40K has its bits of kick-ass horror, you know, but with 40K, orcs are just so goofy and funny. And when I would watch it, I'm like, oh, I just want to. If I had all the power in the world and the money and everything, I would love to do like a role-playing thing where I'm an orc, you know, because I love it. I even practiced I'm just such a fan that I even practiced, you know, how to sound orky and whatnot. And it's just something I love. Like, I fell in love with orcs because orcs, you know, orcs love to fight. I love to fight. Orcs is green. Green's my favorite color. 40K orcs have this thing where if enough of them are gathered, they can manifest on almost anything, you know? And it's like, and they're the happiest race. They're having fun. They're happy. Yeah. You know?
It shouldn't work, but it does work.
Yep. They just ramshackle their
stuff that they make.
Yep.
There's actually something I shouldn't probably be saying this, so it's very secret, but there's a
we won't tell anyone, we'll keep this secret.
Author, fairly famous Warhammer author, who's actually one of our listeners, and I get to chat with him every so often. I was like, I've read most of your books. I won't say who because I don't want to rat him out, but
okay. Absolutely,
that was too cool.
I read Brutal and Cunning, which is the latest one. Which is one of the orc books because I love orc books that go from an orc perspective. But I read Brutal and Cunning, and I loved it, man. It was like, yes, this is what orcs are. And there's a new one that's going to come out that focuses on Gazgul, who's an orc. And what it is there's like this grot who's kind of like a goblin. and the Imperium, the Inquisition, capture him, and they're trying to interrogate him and try and figure out about Gaskell. But the thing is that it slowly kind of goes nuts and it's kind of starts to fall apart or something along that line, because of this Grot is telling the story of Gaskell and his experience with Gaskell. So you get it from his point of view and you hear the ridiculousness that goes off. And I just can't wait to hear the reactions that the human characters have whenever this Grot is just spitting all this. Yeah, it's just going to be so funny, man, because the orcs don't care. They don't care. They're just having fun. And I respect it. And that's why I respect it. They don't care what other races think. They do what makes them happy. They love to fight. Their favorite color is green. And if they believe in something, they can make it happen. And that's why I love orcs so much. I can get behind it.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. It really is. You know, I honestly can't remember if I already asked this question yet, but, you know, did I ask you such a silly thing? Because I got so absorbed in the last thing. But what do you guys want to get out of the stories that y'all tell?
Speak for my cast. I can't speak for them at all.
Your audience. Your audience. What do you want your audience to get out of this story? You know, out of y'all's shows.
Oh,
the takeaway.
I kind of answered that one, but maybe.
I think, yeah, because I can't remember if I did, if I asked you.
I ramble too. So I think I know what I get out of the stories, but I think the takeaway for people is just to have fun adventures where they're in a safe space, but the characters are not, and the actors are not. They're in a safe space. The actors are fine. Mm-hmm. We make sure they're watered, but and you know, fed and such. But as a safe space for you to experience some really terrible stories, go to the dark places that you're probably interested if you're like a Curse of Strahd fan or. If you enjoy really dark stuff in the fantasy worlds like Witcher, this is where we want to go.
That's awesome. Yeah, definitely. I was like, I kind of had my checks notes moment there, but absolutely, you know, I think, again, it really comes down to this is something that it's a type of media and entertainment that people like, you know, that people get a kick out of it. And I think that there's, and whenever I found out that you guys did horror, and then I found out you guys have a D&D show, I'm like, oh man, that's one hell of a sandwich you got there. You know what I mean? That's such a good combination. And I'm really excited for that. Absolutely. So one thing that also-
Have you gotten into it yet?
No, I'm going to. Like, I'm going to. I wanted to-
Oh, okay. I'm not spoiling things intentionally to try and avoid.
Good, good.
So you can,
yeah.
You can enjoy.
Oh, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to totally figure it out because I will. There's no way I won't. Like, as soon as I'm done, I'm going to get everything else prepared. You know, I'm actually going to go for like a quick run, but I'm going to pop it on. And at some point, I'm just going to end up stopping mid run and be like, you know, totally. I'm totally, there's no way I can't, man. You know, horror and D&D is a concept in itself, you know, and then you get guys like Jeff coming in and you have all the talent that's also behind that, you know. And I'm absolutely looking forward to it. And I definitely am gonna be supporting that show in that small way. And where can anyone else who is interested in this find you guys and support y'all?
Well, you can find us at darkdice.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. That would be Spotify, Stitcher, Apple. Apple's kind of being buggy for the last month. If you're in May 2021, there have been some bugs. So please forgive them. They are working on those things and fixing them. They've just migrated to, they're upgrading their platform. Anyway, anywhere you can find podcasts. And then actually we're almost entirely listener supported through Patreon. So patreon.com/foolandscholar. The link is in all of our show notes for every episode that comes out. But that's really what keeps our lights on and what makes our shows really the ability to be as special as they are, because we're able to invest the time into making them good. Like I spent from 8 a.m. all day, all night till 2 a.m. for the last 3 days getting this episode ready for hopefully today. And after this interview, I'm going to work on mixing and mastering and hopefully have it up tonight with any luck for our patrons. And then it'll be out to the public on Wednesday.
Yeah. You know, it's the price you pay for amazing stuff like this, you know, and everyone knows that you're ready to pay it, because it's just so, that payoff, man, it's just something on another level that people won't really experience until they've done it. Because the give, the sacrifice, and the reward, it's all balanced out, man. And what's crazy is that the reward seems to always be above the sacrifice, you know? Because once you get there, because when you get there and you drag through the mud, you know, it's tough. But the reward is almost like twice as much, if not more, than the sacrifice when you get there, when you hit that. You know, it's always beyond the struggle. And that's what really makes it worth it. And again, it's the price you pay. You stay up all night, you bust your butt, and you work really hard. And look at where you're at, man. You know, it speaks for itself, you know, and it's a roll of the dice that you decided. And when you spend time like that, you cross out the ones, twos, and threes, and you're just rolling five and up, you know, and you make it easy. You really increase your own chances to hit that nat 20. The harder you work, the more you'll hit that natural 20 every time. That's just how it is.
Good words.
Yeah. Thank you, man. You know, this was a wonderful interview. Thank you so much, Travis, for this. And thank you so much for being patient, because there's a couple of words that I really had to like pick out of my brain that I was struggling there for a bit. But, you know, wonderful advice, wonderful story, wonderful experience. And, you know, I look forward to seeing what you guys have. And that's another reason why it's like, tell us where to find you. And in the back of my head, I need to know where to find you.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, and thank you.